You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Social media, and thank everyone for coming to this last breakout session. My name is Chad Israel. I am Director of Social Media for Engage Digital here in Atlanta. My third week in Atlanta, so I'm enjoying a lot of the warm southern hospitalities.
From where?
From Columbus, Ohio. And when I say Columbus, everyone always thinks Columbus, Georgia down here. So, I just came out of James Andrews' session, which is going to be I.O., baby. That's good. Yeah. But just came out of James Andrews' session, and that guy was amazing. So please do not hold me to that standard. And I was given the instructions that this was the non-conference, and slides and general, presentation is not going to be accepted here. So really just want to start the dialogue and let everyone in this room, obviously everyone knows what social media is if you're wanting to know what's going to be next in social media. So to talk about the things that we already know about, be very redundant for this group. And really, when we're going to talk about what's next for social media, we're going to talk about Web 3.0, these sort of new ideals, new platforms that are going to enable us as social networkers and communicators to do what we do even more effectively. And essentially, if we look at what has kind of created our world for us today, it's the MySpace, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. There's a list of sites that everyone, platforms that everyone uses to engage within their communities. Whether you're a brand, you're a blogger, or you have just a message that you want to deliver to the community. I work with the challenge of getting brands inside social networks and inside these communities and platforms, most of which don't want a brand inside their communities. So, and definitely a lot of challenges in traversing through those through those communities and trying to get our goals achieved and met. But I guess when we think about where it's going to go and what has made social media and these, with the Web 2.0 so easy is the access of information and the speed in which our thoughts and our words and video content get distributed. And the only thing that I know that's going to be that next step is how we're going to take what we do on our box and do what we do mobile inside our smartphone. And looking at mobile is what's going to be the next emerging platform for social media, because it's the one thing that everyone has on. And everyone probably pretty much knows that the rate of smartphones is rapidly increasing. And once that group penetrates the marketplace, we're going to have a lot of new tools to play with as social marketers. And how are we going to leverage these tools? And that sort of gets to how I look at social media and social networking is two simple things. It's harnessing the communication that's out there. No matter whether or not you've got a brand that just doesn't have any clue as to what their social media footprint is, or someone that's very savvy and wants to interact and react on more or less a real-time basis with their brand community or community in general. So some of the challenges that we're going to face, I want to kind of open it up as a dialogue and maybe go across the room and kind of everyone give me a little bit of information as to what you guys do, what you're most interested in learning, as to what's the next step. And then we all come together, because this is what I see the future of social media. It's the community. It's all of us. And that's really what's going to lead us into this next realm. And so, anyone want to take an opening stab at? Yes, sir.
Kind of reiterating.
And also, if you want to just give your name and also your Twitter name as well.
Oh, that's not necessary.
Sorry. Okay.
I'm Jason Brett, J Brett with two T's on Twitter. So the question that kind of came up, or a comment and theme that came up in the last session that I was in, was kind of predicting the next big thing to a little bit of an extent. So I want to pose to this group: what's going to break social media? That kind of seems to me to maybe be a predictor of what the next big thing might be. Is what's going to break it?
Yeah, in the back.
Central control. If you centralize control of social media in a way, like as far as the website is concerned, to a local type of control, everybody's already paranoid about face wash. The thing with GPS and mobile phones, that being integrated, brings a whole other fold to social media. So once Big Brother is actually watching us, once they change the login process, it's just an algorithm. I think that is probably the most scary aspect of my participation, because I believe in bad retentions. I expose myself online. Google Latitude, you can see my location at any moment. I really don't care who friends me and who sees where I am, because personally, if I think somebody wants to laugh at me, they're going to find me no matter what.
So your point, though, isn't Latitude kind of the closest thing we've got to a centralized social media infrastructure right now?
It is.
Isn't it heading that way?
Yeah, it is, but it's how it's used against you. That's where I think the centralized market comes into it. It's basically, if this information is all put into one area, and then all of a sudden it's used to reflect any one bad decision, so it's used to basically get some pictures for the future activity, I think that's where I'm most assuming about what things are in progression. And the only way you can figure out prediction is future action. Sitting there centralizing all of it. As long as it's spread out, I know Google's trying to centralize it, but at the same time, everything they've done with Chrome, they've ended up, other than the actual search results, they've given out the code and the API accessibility to interact with them. Most people have the basic take information for it. But they say, other than search results, they don't.
Excuse me, to follow up on the Latitude of the Web 3.0. Now that you've used Latitude, what would you expect to see in terms of applications and take advantage of knowing who you are?
Well, I mean, it's going to need some sort of a Facebook platform. I don't need to do it.
No, this is exactly what this session is supposed to be for.
So in exposing it, who's able to see you, exactly what they're able to see. I'm glad that you're so everybody is filled in. I can show someone my exact location. I can show them the general vicinity of the city. Or I can just basically say, I'm here, or something like that. Or you can only show your location on your email server. So you can do a lot of control over that.
What would you hope to see in terms of business applications or other related to knowing where you are?
Well, so you think about space, right? I mean, what things happen in life in space. Emergencies happen in space, right? You are in a location of this whole space when bad things happen. You could have the EMS applications. You could have police applications. You could just have relative who I know around me, right? How interesting, you know. I love the randomness of life when we bump into people at the store. What if all I had to do was walk another block and see someone I hadn't seen in 3 years? You know? Yes, there's ways to leverage it from a business perspective, but I think it's more about relative location and interaction. So anything that you can interact with, a person, this is a meaningful app, right? I'm at a store. Maybe I don't want to declare this order's name on my Twitter, right? So I go in. Someone can create a mashup and say, this person just said that they hate this store. Oh, their Google Latitude goes boom. So you could create a series of mashups that would be effective rating systems based on space and place. So there's lots of opportunities.
Can you expand on that? I'm not sure I understand what you say when you mash up with the line of food.
So a mashup is effectively a way to consume another application. What I mean by that is when you go to Facebook, you have those little apps, right? But it consumes who your friends are. Like, you know, your friend's a fan of H&R Block, right? So that application goes out, consumes a set of information for you, mashes it up into a presentation that calls for action, for lack of a better phrase. So Google Maps or Google Earth, I don't know if the right app database part of it is, but you know, people consume that through a series of APIs and create their own apps. Twitter has an API, So it's a way to consume another thing and put it in a different context. That's as simple as you can conceptually get it to.
I think that's also the heart of, you know, one of the hearts of Web 2.0, where the first wave of the web, you know, everything was almost in its individual silos. And now with open APIs, you have huge platforms that are now opening themselves up to other huge platforms, and then smaller platforms can take advantage of, you know, everything that Google, MySpace, Facebook develops. And then when we look at the next phase, where we're going to be in the next 2 to 3 years, I think we carry on with that, exactly what the gentleman in the back was just saying. And we carry on with that sort of collaborative effort, and we build on the insights of others. And in the back again.
Well, I was going to say, truly the ultimate goal is to have basically a database there for augmented reality.
Yes.
Everything eventually gets into augmented reality. So basically everything you do has some sort of metadata attached to it. So when you go to a website, Google has its own information stored about that website. So when you make a search, it's actually reflecting the metadata of the website that Google collects. And then you get to that website. Eventually, everything will have some sort of metadata affiliated with it. Whether you're a person, whether you're a building, whether you are a company, whatever it is, it's going to be augmented with that information. So your GPS location will be able to basically disclose, whether it's on a screen or whether it's actually in some sort of structural delivery, with that information that other people that interact with somehow. Does that make sense? So if I walk into this building, I'll be able to see the temperature and who's here and what conferences are going on. Stuff like that, just because of what people are saying.
Bring it in front.
Yeah, just to kind of piggyback off of what you're saying about what's going to kill social media, and piggyback off of what they're saying about space, I remember when I was in school, I did a report on Japan. And you talk about what's going to kill social media. Commercialization is what some people might say will kill social media, because it's all about, you know, kind of this free spirit, independent thing. Yeah, and then, you know, you bring companies in, and it's like, oh no, we're crushing social media. But in Japan, they have their metro train cars. They can they have microchips in their metro train cars. So if they walk into a metro station, they have these big LCD displays the size of that screen. And it has an ad for an album on it. And you can take your metro train card up to that ad and tap it on the ad and download the song to your metro train card. It is the most awesome thing I've ever read about. But so
McDonald's is working on that as well.
Yeah, and it's so there's this really big thing in Japan going on around location-based services. So you walk into a Macy's and your iPhone pops up and says, these are the current sales and specials that are going on in Macy's. And so that is kind of, I think, you talk about taking it mobile, it's kind of moving into that direction as well. Location-based services is going to be a huge part now that we have things like Google Latitude. And so, and talking about mashups, mashing up the location-based services into the social media services like Twitter and things like that, you've got applications that know that you're in the Starbucks and will automatically send out a tweet to everybody that's within a certain radius of you and invite them to coffee with you at the Starbucks. So
with a coupon.
With
yeah.
A coupon.
Yep.
Yeah, it's there.
Yep.
So I work kind of in a security domain, and I see a lot of backlash from parents, from government officials about these mobile social infrastructures. How are we going to address those security issues to where we're just not squashed under and we actually have room to thrive and to develop and to build these type of really unique, cool applications?
That's a very good question. I think it might all, yeah, just go ahead.
We're in the government market, to that, to your point. We do tech vendors that sell, and that is a very big issue. Do you know what the number one cybersecurity threat is right now? Check out the CEP blog. Anybody have an idea what it might be?
Facebook? Soldiers?
No, you know what it is? It's constant negative reporting that undermines business confidence and economic recovery and puts it to, believe it or not, the CEP blog, but the security and the mobile application is just absolutely huge.
Because I could see a huge backlash of people saying, that's great, this technology's out there, but just because I'm driving past McDonald's, I don't want my GPS machine to pop up and say, hey, you know, you can get free coffee at 8 a.m. this morning. You know?
I guess we're all going to revolve around these conversations, but it's sort of similar, you know, the TV, content on TV, you know, is it up to some government entity to decide what we are supposed to consume, or is it up to us as individuals?
Right.
And we can easily turn it again. Exactly. I mean, you can flip it to airplane mode, or, you know, flip it to no messaging mode, or no marketing mode, and you know, we can still exist. But, yeah.
I think everything's being developed around all these new cool ideas, and it's all kind of going towards, and with open source, it's all kind of going towards apps. And so if you don't want, you know, the McDonald's coffee at 7 a.m., don't download the McDonald's GPS coupon app and don't subscribe to the service. And then so you're kind of good there. And so as long as everything kind of remains subscription or download-based to where it's not like my iPhone comes with McDonald's GPS subscription coupon service.
It raises a large question. Yes. Is that if we have an infinite capacity to expand into new possibilities, new coupons, new resources, but there's nothing at the infrastructure level that helps us to merge those back together. I get a lot of juice from analogies with nature and life, and nature has a very simple solution to merging. It's called sexual reproduction. And there's nothing like that is so orderly in social media. So it's already broken. And we just haven't come to terms with that larger filtering problem.
I think that's a large exaggeration. I mean, spam filtering in and of itself is four layers, it's international. So when it comes to people receiving spam, you know, I don't know how many people still receive that in their inbox. And if you go, sorry, you're with the wrong service, but in my Gmail, I don't receive spam messages in my inbox anymore. That's partly because there's four different layers of security and systems that's sat there to control that sort of thing. Not just that, there's also authoritative action that are taken on spammers, not just legally, but also technologically, where actual servers can go and shut down things that are that they find as malicious servers.
It's a larger question than spam, though. That's obviously something we don't want, but it's also a question of how do we prioritize what we do want. We have many more choices in life than we can select them on. So how can we get our media to help us do that instead of just giving us more possibilities?
And it may be, I hate to say it, guys, age related, because Mark Schinkel, is he here right now? I all know him.
Yeah.
He was saying, he introduced me to a young guy over the internet in England, Ben, 21, and Mike said, you know, he can hold so much more in his brain. And Mike's not that old. But the point is that we have clients that we're trying to get in social media. They could add incredible value to their niches, to their technology silos. You know, well, how do I keep up with this? These are important people. Brain drain already. Yeah, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Those are the ones I recommend, plus I have a blog. And that's like being the chameleon that crawls into the Crayola box and explodes for people over 15, you know? So I agree with your point.
Go ahead.
You know, I'd like to go back to where you began on mobile.
Okay.
And second on Web 3.0. Either can you or other people in the room talk about what type of mobile applications are happening outside of the United States? Sometimes we think we're advanced, but other places. What's happening other places that hasn't yet come here?
And absolutely. I think one of the things that's going to create a huge bump for us here is the economy. And mobile here was just getting, I was so excited for mobile to be on the front of everyone's agenda for 2009. And now everyone's sort of backpedaling and, you know, I guess that's the downside to the American psychology is we go back into our caves when things are bad.
We wait for them to get better before we come back out. But overseas, I was working with a French company in augmented reality and seeing everything that was going on in Europe and Asia. And Marker was tracking a lot of ability with the smartphones, high-def cameras, and the ability to take real-world objects and images, import them onto a server somewhere, and then have that information, that ping the information that spits it back out to your phone, to where you could have, you know, put your phone on a McDonald's emblem, and Ronald McDonald comes and dances on your phone. I mean, those sorts of things are on the verge of happening. Seeing what, you know, definitely texture mapping and what, you know, Google Earth has been able to do and going everywhere. That's, I think, the start. You know, it's merging the physical, you know, animate world inside a virtual world. And you see that, you know, Second Life and a bunch of virtual worlds as well. We can probably, there's probably some experts in the room on, and they can start talking about where the future of virtual worlds are going to go in the next platform. But anyone else that has anything to chime in? Yeah, in the back.
In Korea, you know, they can use
about popping it up on you. You will be, probably the first thing you're going to see is opt-in. You'll walk into Barney's, and I know they have the capability now. You walk into Barney's and you can sign on and say, I want to hear what you have going on.
Right.
But we can't push it at you yet.
Right.
So you, it's going to pay
a while. Isn't that the elephant in the room, right? This technology is enabling access.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Access to choice. You know, if we're talking about being dead, right? We have choices. since the beginning of time, right? And we've had adoption of new things, right? Not everyone thought the wheel was a cool thing, right? And the wheel probably did show up in Asia first. It probably took 15 years to get useful here in the United States, but it's a standard of social technology adoption curve, right? Everyone gets a high, the what you call bleeding edge or Kool-Aid drinking geographies get on it first, and then, you know, then it comes over to another geography. You know, I don't know if it's ever going to kill us. It's just a big evolution, right? And the only thing that's changed is how we interact with things and how things interact with us. So if we think about brands or, you know, I you're absolutely spot on. It's consumers have the power. We transition the voice of the brand. We transition the voice of decision. Not from the biggest billboard in the biggest ad space, the interesting commercial that we watched at our desk on Monday 17 times last week, right? Instead, we transitioned it to our personal choices. And that's what this is enabling, right? And so, you know, good choices, bad choices, right on, but they're just choices. You're going to get on this road or that road. It's not about cool technology. Right? It is. I mean, there's nothing cool about knowing people.
I would disagree with that a little bit. I hear an awful lot in all of the sessions that I've been to today about essentially buying stuff and how this technology is transforming the experience of buying stuff. And I personally don't consider myself a consumer. I think of myself as a citizen and a community member. And you are dead on. When this space is more about selling stuff to people, than it is about the people-to-people interaction, then it's broken. And I believe that somewhere in the world there is a dictatorship that is going to fall, a theocracy that is going to fall because of this technology. And the power here is about the ability for people to get together and exchange ideas and to communicate in ways that they can't because of other things. I think it's the first thing that society has seen since the advent of television that gives us the ability to speak now.
I think we almost saw that a few months ago.
Yeah.
In looking at how President Obama was able to leverage communities and communication.
Did you guys see the Facebook versus the FARC article that came out where Facebook was able to, or a man through a Facebook group page was able to connect 4 million people worldwide to protest the FARC in Colombia, and actually empowered the people of Colombia and made changes within the government through one Facebook group page.
You know, you add 128-bit encryption to some of this stuff, and it changes dynamics in ways that marketing people it's a whole other world. You know, here in the U.S., obviously we like to shop, we like to buy stuff.
And, you know, that's
program IBCR. You know.
I think if we look at the history of marketing, you know, marketing has always sort of tried to own communication. You know, at least, you know, there's a property or a company that owns the platform. But marketing has always wanted to own that voice or that piece of content that goes to that platform. And I think that's almost marketing. Our challenge has been to scurry around this new technology and figure out how are we going to make money for this for our clients. And they're definitely, there are examples that we could pull, you know, that highlight how this can be the best benefit for business. And then there's others that, you're right, me as a marketer, going in as a marketer, when I go into the forum or community, chances are I'm going to get shot down. Yeah, just because I'm going into that community to market a product. I'm not going in there really to join the community. I'm not really that enthused about joining the conversation because, you know, my job goes from client to client, so I've got to be able to turn it on and off with whatever it is I'm representing online. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, there's places where business, I think, fit into this mold and others where it doesn't. And I guess us as savvy social marketers need to take a look at, you know, what it is we're representing and where it best fits. And that's, you know, I guess that might be the way to keep everyone happy.
And as a marketer, is the biggest pushback you're getting from clients, not the mobile applications per se, but just $19 and something's got to get cut?
You know, honestly, right now, for social media, I think we're at a great position because it's still free. You know, the only thing that it costs is the time that, you know, the investment of time that goes into it, and the knowledge of being able to create, you know, your communities and engage in the different platforms. But, you know, I think, you know, past few years, what I've seen is social media has been an add-on, you know, almost as if, you know, when a traditional budget is spent, you know, how are we still, we haven't reached our goal. So let's use, leverage these social media platforms to try and get more consumers or reach more consumers. And now it's starting to shift because they see, okay, should I invest all this money in my traditional TV budget when, yeah, really, yeah, I look at these rates of, you know, my ROI, and if I look at these little pods and how can I cultivate these communities, is that a better value than doing a Super Bowl commercial? And for some brands it is. And so I think there's marketers are definitely getting more savvy and starting to understand the power behind this. And, I mean, that's the crazy thing. As soon as, you know, really the old dogs in the room understand this, there's going to be, that. Hopefully the Web 3.0 and these new platforms are going to be around. So people like us who are the early adopters when it comes to these, you know, new technologies, will be able to take what we've learned from this, you know, this social media experience. And I don't think social media is ever going to die. Yeah, I think the way the web is and the ability for everyone to access it easier is just going to make it a much broader forum for us. Because, you know, my background comes from entertainment, music, film, and TV. And really, I started out promoting for, you know, for clubs and for artists. And it was hitting the street. It was guerrilla marketing. And when I saw the you know, what MySpace and Facebook would enable us to do as promoters, I mean, that's essentially the same, it's the same theory, it's the same practice, except we just have a larger sounding board now, and we have a better ability to hone in and find our target. But I'll keep it open to the forum. So
kind of getting back to kind of where mobile's going and Web 3.0, like, I see it being a more immersive kind of person-to-person connection, not necessarily branding and marketing, although that's a component, because I know Vodafone just got done with their beta version of developing a cell phone application where if I'm in Second Life in Atlanta, but I have a colleague in Auckland, New Zealand, that's in her real life, I can call her little HUD and her cell phone will ring and we can voice chat with me being in Second Life and her being on her cell phone. So breaking down those barriers of what's real world and what's in world or virtual, those type of connections with mobile devices is one of, like, the bigger pushes that I see.
You know, for that, I think what we'll see in the future is just the emphasis on the actual media, such as Twitter and Facebook, because in the end, we're really just trying to connect with each other.
Yeah.
And these are just allowing us different ways to connect with one another. The medium is going to be de-emphasized, the actual connection is going to be emphasized. And but this is all dependent upon our own participation in this game. I know a lot of people are probably concerned about security issues. We've come this far, so far out of bad attacks, such as, let's say, the portable email thing that we've all experienced in the 90s, has pretty much been put to a close in modern day applications of the email. There's this natural self-governance that's occurring in the mind of the people. The more the good is rising to the top, the bad is being squashed. I think as we move into new technologies, we'll always see the evil aspects of it occurring, but also as we progressing forward, I think we have more ways of figuring out how to autonomize the governance there and get rid of that and emphasize the good aspects of it. So I think we're moving into this augmented reality, but we will have some crap to put up with it. We don't see any of the
things. Yeah, and listening to the conversation and thinking about it too, I think it's going to be easier to do what we're doing now in terms of social media. It'll be easier to find people, it'll be easier to connect with them, it'll be easier to know more about them. Right now, it's kind of all over the map. You know, it's got some stuff on Facebook, some stuff on Twitter, some stuff on, you know, kind of all over the place. As we get more familiarity with using social media and more tools out there for using social media, the management of the social media and the ability to get at the information that you want when you want it will become a lot easier and a lot clearer. So if you want to start up a group that has this kind of set of things that they're interested in, then I think you can easily find that group and then start a conversation surrounding it. The other thing in terms of listening to what's going on too is that I think that it'll become the language barrier between different languages will start to decrease. And you know, I'm seeing stuff where there are translators out there that will translate chat between two parties of different languages. And I think that, you know, if that really does start to take off, then you're going to also see conversations that are people that don't really speak the same language but are then able to come together in a web type of situation, in a social network type situation, and not only communicate but collaborate and do some and do work together which they wouldn't have been able to do before. So that's some of the things that, I see. And I'm Robert Joseph with Blue Life. And my Twitter handle is Blue Life, G-L-U-L-I-F-E.
Thank you.
Cool. Yep. I think he's bringing a good point when we're talking about the future of social media, and that is the looking at it from a global aspect. Because a lot of the stuff that we've just been talking about, especially as far as retail and things that we're doing with social media, have all been in the context of America. And like we're talking about retail things that we can do with social media that have been going on in Japan for years and technology that's everywhere else. But when you think of it on a global scale, I think social media and the technology that we have now will enable us to definitely communicate and collaborate and have conversations and bring in a completely new dimension to the conversations we're having now. Social media as it is now allows us to bring in a new dimension in that I'm in Atlanta and I start a conversation on Twitter or Facebook and somebody in Silicon Valley or Colorado or the middle of Alabama can, you know, provide their input on this conversation. But imagine that exact same conversation where, okay, I've got all those people, and now somebody from New Zealand, somebody from Japan, somebody from Australia, somebody from South Africa is now in that same discussion. And that, I think that just will add a completely new dimension to social media as it is now. And it's definitely something that I can appreciate having a minor in Japanese language. Being able to bring in that extra international dimension of things that we can talk about and things that we can learn from each other. And I think that will kind of break down the barrier that we're sitting here talking about, oh, well, America got this and they just had it for 3 years. That may not be the case in the future because America will be collaborating with Asia and we'll all have, you know, the same thing or close to it. The gap won't be so big.
I think that's already happening. I mean, on Twitter, I've already got people from Australia, Darren Rouse. I've got a gentleman who speaks French half the time and English the other half, which is interesting.
I love the idea about the translation, but he'll self-translate, you know, basically is what's happening.
And that's great. We, there was a bombing late 2008. I can't remember
Mumbai?
Yeah, Mumbai. And there was a reporter in Mumbai using Twitter to talk about it instantaneously. You could follow him. It was the most interesting thing. And so that's kind of already happening. What I'm scared of, which may break this model, is monetization. And monetization of, are the funds going to remain there for Facebook to grow and keep growing an ad? Are the ad dollars going to remain enough for these tools to grow? That's going to be interesting to see if they can keep managing themselves. Would anybody stay on Facebook if they knew that they would have to pay for it next month? Would you stay on it?
You can bill me under $100 a year, I would pay it all day.
See? Okay.
Right. Productivity.
Right.
Right. We've been talking about futuristic, you know, future round of great stuff, like devices, interoperability. But what about what it actually gives us? So we've got relationships. Cool. Chat buzzword down, right? Next buzzword is maybe when we ignore productivity. How many people ask for information on social networks that we normally would spend searching online? When somebody in your node, in your dimension, right, or whatever you want to call
it,
has it, and they have it on their hard drive, it's indexed, or to have it in their delicious links that just throw it at you. At the end of the day, you know, that's a valuable tool. And I don't know that monetization kills anything. It just gets rid of some of the spammers.
Right? Yeah, but an example of that is, remember when TV was free?
Good point.
I think it's the startups in the early 2000s that I was competing with, but their marketing budget was 240% of their revenue. The marketing budget was 240% of their revenue. What's Twitter's marketing budget?
Well, I think we just received it.
But what's their marketing budget?
Zero.
Yeah. So all their money is going to this product. And to the point where, like John said, we're going to be delighted to make $100 a year with this proven the value. So all those dollars that we're going to marketing is going into the product. We're going to get hooked. We're going to gladly pay for it. Go ahead, Les.
I think the difference, though, is that it's from TV and online media. Online media is that there are all these people who can do this for free, though, the open source community. You always find that an idea will copy it. I mean, copying so much more easily online. And I don't think that, I think any business that makes, somebody's always going to make it just as good.
Someone's going to pay for the data set, right, at some point, right? The disk have to spin, and that's got electricity. So I guess if you bought the same set of hardware forever and all wind power, then monetization would be something that would never need to happen.
Google's
There's investment. It's an investment, right? There's some philanthropic open source billionaire that just wants to support an ecosystem forever. I want to meet him. My address is, and it has to be about revenue. Waiting for their monetization.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're bringing that up. I mean, we just all read about Twitter just raised another $250 million. And there's a lot of conversation going on right now about the monetization, and they need to come up, like Facebook has now come up with, this survey tool that they think is going to help them monetize. But everyone I polled in my Twitter group, I asked them, how much would it be worth to you? People said they were willing to spend money, and yet Twitter won't even look at charging people. They're not even considering that. Now, I have a social network, and my social network is for the retail industry, and it's all about what you were taught. We connect everyone who deals in the retail industry together so that they can collaborate, communicate, share, and pass each other's delicious bookmarks. And we've had people put deals together in Dubai and shopping centers, and all of that is taking place in the retail trade center. But it's killing us because we can't monetize. Because until somebody like a Twitter or a Facebook or somebody pulls the plug and says we can charge somebody, we're discovering that nobody will advertise.
Value for someone to pay. It's not a valuable product, but I think the cameraman's got a question.
Sorry, it's funny because everybody keeps talking about the value of it, and the funny thing is, if you think about Google, right, who is the one that has monetized a lot of these services, what are they monetizing? They're monetizing content, and what is Twitter? Twitter is content, right? So the more that we contribute, the more someone's going to be able to monetize that. So I think that we were talking about something that potentially will die that I can't see why it would die, because if you even think about this, you could use this content for competitive intelligence, and so you can go and resell it. If you can tell what your competitor sells and for what are they selling it for easily, wouldn't you pay for it? And especially if you can squash them, absolutely. So I don't think it's going to ever die.
What about doing it like
Nevo
did?
Oh no.
But what about, if you remember, Radiohead did that in Rainbows, where you paid what you thought it was worth. So what about doing that with social media, Facebook or Twitter? You pay what you put in, or you pay what you think it's worth, and then you're going to have your freeloaders, of course, but where I may think Twitter is worth $100 million every 5 years for my company, somebody else may say, oh, well, it's only worth $1 million for my company. But you're not putting a limit to the potential there.
Okay.
Jason Bradford and I was able to read that while I was reading Twitter. That's a real life situation right there. So happy birthday.
Thank you.
I heard Joe Brighthouse talk about Web 3.0 as facilitated network. This idea that where the opportunity is, and I just read the Seth Godin book about tribes.
Yeah.
And this idea that sort of to your point about the social network for your clients, this idea that if you're aggregating and facilitating and helping add value to people, then there's money to be made. And it's no different than a consulting practice or anything else. It's just done with the new tools. And that's sort of where I've been looking to for Web 3.0 is how to create that kind of value as a facilitator of people that I know need to know each other, that need to know what each other knows and bringing those together.
And we were just talking about the analogy of how Web 1.0 died.com was, and then Web 2.0 rose from the ashes. Now that we're going through a similar type of economic downturn, how soon do you think we're going to see these new platforms start to evolve and come out?
Can I ask a question about the premise?
Sure.
Your statement. Did Web 2.0 rise from the ashes, or was it just simply the next evolution of what happened, whether there was a crash or not?
Yeah, that's a good question. I kind of think it did rise from the ashes because
I
came from one of the companies that was.
To be honest with you, I'm not really sure that I believe that there is such a thing as a Web 3.0. And I haven't been convinced of that yet. Not to say that it's not, but I just need more convincing that we aren't. I mean, in my view from the beginning, the power of the web in general has been about an easier way to have a dialogue with your customers. Web 2.0 brought about some tools that made it much more cost-effective and easy for companies to have that dialogue and ongoing conversation with their customers. So I'm not really sure what this next step is. It's really about communications. But is there a new set of tools coming online that's changing the paradigm so much that it's like a completely different experience again?
That's what I'm looking for. And that's where I do see like where mobile would be that only element, because I haven't seen anything else on the radar screen other than, you know, some really cool things when it comes to, you know, putting on some goggles and, you know, you get inserted inside a virtual world and stuff like that. But yeah, I don't think it's defined itself yet. But when I look for things that I could latch on to is what's going to be the next wave. The only thing I see, especially in this country, is the mobile platforms.
Yeah, I think one to look at is the idea of the open social standard, where instead of being a member of the house at Facebook, each person potentially is an independent root of a social network, and the open social standard is offering that shift. And along with that, you can see where then the citizens would take more power from existing hierarchies if they could each found their own center. So that's the big social shift, I think, that's potential for. A lot of people are tracking that.
Yep.
I was going to say, we've been talking like a lot about the software, and, you know, as kind of what are we going to do with the future. But other than mobile, there's also the hardware to look at. Like, what new devices are going to be engineered that are going to take advantage of this data? Because social media is, like we said, producing all this content, all of this data about people. Well, what new hardware is going to come out that's going to either integrate the mobile device into it, or is just going to directly consume this data hate to go back to Japan again, but they just come up with this little, kind of like a segue, but way better than the Japanese way. But it's got its own little personal location system, and it does the same thing about the coffee, where if you just tell the little wheelchair that you're going out for coffee, and it tells all the other people that are driving around in these chairs that you're going out for coffee. And so here we are again in this kind of location-based and social data, but it's not being integrated in my mobile phone or even on my computer. It's in my transportation device. So, you know, you're looking at cars, times, top inventions of last year, somebody has started engineering the contact lens that allows you to see things like right there, the augmented reality, you know, contact lens. And so you could even venture out to say that people are going to be walking around and you Skype call somebody and they're right here, 640 by 480, 800 by 600 high def in front of your face. So, you know, there's also the question of, you know, what's going to be engineered, the hardware of the future of social media.
That was developed by Georgia Tech, by Professor Georgia Tech, the MIT student.
The wearable computing?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He still walks around, he's developing his next iteration. Oh, I'm Jessica Pater, I work for Georgia Tech. So he's still, and what he's doing is he's taken that huge, and he is shrunken it down to like 2.5 pounds worth of,
yeah.
And it's amazing what that group is doing in interactive computing.
The funny thing is I remember watching the video about that in middle school. Mm-hmm. And I graduated from college, so, you know, in middle school I was like, oh, I'm going to MIT because I want to be one of those people. And so to see, you know, how far we've come in, you know, developing that sort of technology and engineering is really, really cool. Now to see that, you know, back then it was the hard drive and then the glove to input and then
the
big
goggles.
You had the
big
goggles,
yeah.
With a little screen right here, but like they've got a contact lens now. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's like, you put it in your eye and nobody knows that you even have a screen on.
He's working with electromagnetic waves, putting sensors on your neck,
yeah.
To actually be able to let like avatars that he creates to be in that virtual world like respond how he wants them to. So saying like they look and he wants this avatar to pick up a glass, like he doesn't have to say or do anything auditorially. It's all because of something in those contact lenses that he developed and the electromagnetic waves that he's capturing that the avatars will pick things up and do actions.
Right.
So, how sweet.
Huh?
So, how sweet.
Yeah.
Based on your comment having to do with the hardware, I think as far as where the hardware will be going, all the hardware that you're saying become part of mainstream, for example, the iPhone, they're all being built to support the software that is trying to meet what people are trying to do with the software. For example, all the GPS stuff, people are wanting to be more connected with where people are, which is why they're integrating a lot of that in the mobile device. It's something that people already have as part of their daily routine and finding ways to integrate more of the technology into the hardware of it to facilitate the communications over multiple platforms between the internet and your cell phone for a number of different reasons depending on why you choose to use the technology. And forever, I mean, that's always how hardware has been developed. You get bigger hard drives because people want to carry more space around. People are integrating in GPS because they want to be able to integrate more of the geolocation stuff in order to map it to finding locations or being able to keep in touch with people.
In the back?
Going back to what I said, the MIT students at TED conference has gone up. They just revealed, they just came up with this virtual. You kind of wear it and you go virtual something like wear it. Have you heard about it?
Say that one more time.
On Thursday, among the students at Tech, on the conference, we just revealed, maybe that's what people do, we revealed a usable, you kind of wear this suit and you're virtual. So you touch everything like this.
I'll kind of say that we know that companies are, you know, they have these labs where they come up with some elaborate stuff that we don't find out until maybe a year or two after they've tested it. So is there a way we can maybe, I don't want to say take pressure, that sounds really strong, but to kind of influence them to release things much more faster and in kind of real time, as soon as they create it, go ahead and put it on the market so we can start using it.
Yeah.
That would be great. I mean, that if we could almost, because I look at a lot of these new technologies and I sort of see that they're adapting the Detroit model, where they'll give us all these cool concept cars that have the ability to do all this stuff, and then we never see it. It never comes to market. I mean, if there was a way to beta test a lot of these cool applications, that could be a new platform, a new social network to set up. I mean, it's a, and thanks everyone. It was a great informative session. And not to get too Orwellian, but I came across something a couple weeks ago that would make everything we're talking about move. And you brought up a point earlier about, you know, when television is free. I'm not sure if this is just some conspiracy theory running around YouTube or if it actually has some validity. But I recently learned that companies like Comcast, AT&T, the backbone for communication providers, are looking into, I guess, dividing up the internet and making everything a subscription base. So, for instance, AT&T could own the rights to MySpace and YouTube, where Comcast could own the rights to Facebook. And if you want to access those, the web would no longer be free. You would have to pay AT&T to access their suite of sites. You would have to pay. Yeah, but it would basically kill anyone's ability to create.
That's the issue of network neutrality, and we believe that Gard has lost.
Okay.
It's not a lodging bite yet. It's still a fight that's going to go on for a while. I can speak with a little bit of authority on it, but not a lot. The real issue is we as consumers are truly consuming bandwidth faster than the telecoms can provide it. Faster than the network providers can provide it. We're consuming this bandwidth, especially going to specific types of sites. YouTube, MySpace, being prime examples. So they're trying to figure out how to grow the network at a pace and still make a profit doing so. And so this is one of the ideas that floats around, this concept of charging for a premium channel, not charging you and I, the consumer, directly for access to a MySpace website, but charging MySpace for a premium quality of service. We're not even saying you're paying for access. We're saying we give best effort service to the typical website. But if you want a guaranteed level of service, then you're going to pay extra for that. And that's very equivalent to buying a DSL line versus a T1 line. You buy a T1, you've got dedicated bandwidth and dedicated throughput. You buy a DSL line, you get best effort, probably 6 meg, maybe 4 sometimes, maybe 768K sometimes if there's a whole lot of traffic going on. So that's kind of the overarching conversation. I'm not surprised you hadn't seen the specific source you cited. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that there have been some conversation about taking specific properties and isolating them and kind of pushing a heavier marketing campaign for them. But I don't see divvying up the internet. I can be totally
wrong. You just calmed my fears.
That happens. We just all get off the commodity debt and pay for the research and education.
Yep. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoy the conference.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of Unconcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.